Okay, we're ready to start our session. Soil carbon, that's Will Horwath's first talk, Soil Carbon Sequestration and Redefining Soil Health. But the name of our session is Understanding the Biology of High Carbon and Low Disturbance Soils, a Key to Soil Health and Sustainable Intensification. So there's a great deal of interest in soil health now, and I think two main ways of improving soil health in both the research and the practicing community is to identify ways of reducing soil disturbance and also increasing organic matter inputs. And many times there can be trade-offs, so we are going to be talking about possible benefits and disadvantages of combining these innovative methods for intensifying agriculture, but in a sustainable way. My name is Marianne Bruns. I'm a soil microbiologist at Penn State University, and I am co-moderating this session with Arnab Bhowmick, who is postdoc also at Penn State University. I would like to introduce our first speaker, who is Will Horwath from the University of California, Davis. And I've already said your title, Will, so we've uploaded. We will be standing up at 12 minutes.
Okay.
And that way you can finish up.
It's a very oddly configured room, and so so I'm going to talk about soil carbon or soil health. It's a big issue in California. We have a whole program in soil health that's actually sanctioned by laws, and so we have funding from the cap and trade to fund research into soil health. And I'm going to just discuss some limitations to that. I think soil health, some of the most important parameters for soil health are pH and soil carbon. And not to say that the microbial processes are important, because they are. They're intertwined. So let's briefly give a summary of soil carbon balance over time in the last century, the managements that can reverse that, talk about disturbance, especially tillage. Does it matter when increasing or sequestering carbon? Does it matter of the amount, or does the quality matter more? Are our systems sort of self-healing because of the way we have, because of the need to produce more on per hectare of land, because of the limitations in the harvest index? And I don't have it. All of you should know the 4 per mil initiative. It's a UN-sponsored initiative, along with the French government, that is promoting soils as a way to mitigate fossil carbon emissions. And no matter how many times I move these graphics back in the background, they seem to pop back up. And so, soil carbon sequestration success is not necessarily defined as how much you can sequester. Okay. So those are the take-home points you should get from my talk. So over time, soil carbon has decreased dramatically, particularly on the onset of intensive agricultural practices, particularly monoculture, which introduced winter fallow. Tillage increased. Manure inputs went down over time as farmers specialized in growing crops, and animal operations were starting to be confined on away from normal operations. Soil erosion decreased as cover was reduced from reduced inputs and tillage, and so carbon is concentrated in the very surface. And if you erode any soil at all, you lose a lot of carbon. And then we reverse that now. We're beginning to reverse that with the use of cover crops, crop rotation, winter fallow is less. We're starting to use recycled organic matter, and then crop yields are increasing. And we have a climate effect, an atmospheric composition change effect with increasing carbon dioxide. But even though our chamber studies suggest that carbon and CO2 enrichment in the atmosphere should increase crop growth, we don't see that in field studies. And so we're not expecting a huge bump from carbon dioxide enrichment in the atmosphere to our cropping systems. Okay. We will see increases in water use efficiency, which may help increase. So again, over time, we see from data that we see that there's a dramatic decrease. Often half the soil organic matter disappears. Tillage or mixing events increase the decomposition rate constant. And that's primarily also a possibility from reducing aggregate size. Larger aggregates hold a lot of labile carbon. And once they're disturbed, but that labile carbon becomes mineralized, it creates a priming effect, which then also begins to mineralize older, more stable soil carbon. Okay. So we begin to reverse that now by adding cover crops and manure. And you don't have to add that much manure to do the reversal. And then we also see that when we begin to add carbon back into the system, we begin to enrich the plow layer again, and not so much below 15 or 30 centimeters. And so again, we're sort of replenishing what we've lost through our intensive agricultural practices by increasing inputs. So, tillage. It's beginning to be a hot subject for debate. There's been some recent analyses in the last 5 years that suggest that tillage may not be so bad as we think. So Palm, for example, found that in 100 studies, over half of them reported carbon sequestration rates were higher in tilled than in no-till systems. In cooler climates, no-till system is somewhat at a disadvantage. You often have lower crop productivity, which means less return, so less carbon inputs. So you have sort of a negative interaction. Johann Six in 2004 suggested that with no-till you increase soil compaction, which then also reduces aeration, which then increases nitrous oxide emissions. And so often it takes 20 years to reduce the effects of soil compaction from no-tillage before you get a positive global warming potential outcome. And then Powelson recently concluded that no-till systems have limited potential to mitigate climate change because of their limited potential to sequester carbon. But we do know there are practices. For example, cover crops often increase soil organic carbon, especially available carbon and inavailability. They have a positive effect on increasing end-use efficiency, and we see that in our long-term studies, for example, at Davis, in our Century experiment and in a sustainable ag farming system project, long-term projects. Just adding cover crops to a conventional system can often increase nitrogen use efficiency up to 90%. So it's not a definitive outcome in all types of agriculture, but you can, in a research environment, you can demonstrate that. And growers know that too. But the problem with growers adopting cover crops is that they have issues with cover crop residues in planting their next crop. And so they know they love cover crops, but they hate them. And so unless they have some sort of incentive to use them, cover crops may not see the light of day in many situations. Crop rotations can act like cover crops. But again, crop rotations are limited by the fact that on economics, again, because growers often pick their crops that give them the best return. And so that often reduces crop rotation diversity. But again, we can show in our long-term plots in an academic environment that if you do implement a diverse crop rotation, you can often increase nitrogen use efficiency by over 50%. So again, we can demonstrate that, and we can tell growers this, but again, they're constrained by economics. And so unless we provide them incentives, or if there's incentive to provide incentives by larger organizations like governments, that won't happen. And so the numerous studies have shown the positive effect of animal manures, and they're sort of magical in that they do supply nitrogen and increase soil carbon, and they don't have to be very much in large amounts. So, for example, the long-term studies in China that are now 30 years old applied manure at a rate that was sort of similar, matched to the end content of the need for the crop. So it wasn't much manure added, but it significantly increases soil organic matter content over time. So, does soil carbon sequestration depend on quality? And everyone should know Larson. And remember, graduate students, papers older than 10 years old are very important. And Larson did a number of studies that showed that These things are not coming out. Anyway, alfalfa, sawdust, ryegrass, a number of things. Didn't show to be, they were independent. So any carbon input raised soil organic carbon. It did have an impact on soil organic nitrogen. So that would have a long-term impact on soil health. And we know it doesn't take much carbon. So we say that we need to sequester carbon to increase soil health. Yes, we do. But in this case here, for example, going from 0.9 to 1% is a 0.1% increase in soil carbon, which is amounting to about 1 or 2 tons of carbon per hectare. And that has a significant impact on yield. Okay, but it wouldn't meet, for example, the expectations of the 4 per mil objectives. So tillage has essentially enriched the soil surface with carbon at the expense of lower depths, while tillage has distributed that carbon. And if we now use an increase in non-harvestable residues, we may be able to offset that, and I'll show that in the next slides. And there's a good paper by David Clay et al. At North Dakota State University that shows the effect of increasing residues as we increase productivity of our agroecosystems, that we have potential increase in soil carbon resulting more from the input of residues than the influence of adopting a no-tillage practice. Okay. So, harvest index. Harvest index is something that's fixed, and breeders know that. And so, for example, in maize, the harvest index really hasn't changed since 1940. It's been about 0.5. It may be increased it to 0.55. But you see that the result is that if you can't change the harvest index, you have to increase biomass to increase yield or in crop productivity. And as you increase yield, you increase residue inputs. So residue inputs have been simultaneously increasing with yield over time. Wheat is a bit slower. The harvest index started out a bit lower. Breeding efforts have brought it up to about 0.5. And we see now that the flip that we saw in happened here in about 1980 in corn is now beginning to happen in wheat, where the residue, but it's still increasing. Okay. And a long-term study in India done by Kundu et al. Is an interesting outcome over 15 years. Increasing amounts of organic matter input show that once you begin to accumulate a lot of soil carbon, the efficiency of forming that carbon begins to decrease. The efficiency of utilizing that N that goes into the soil organic matter also begins to increase. So there's a point where you can't, where the deficiency begins to decrease when you increase soil carbon. And there's also a point where there's no more microbial biomass, so they have to increase their activity to convert that carbon. And so at about 1 or 2% carbon, you max out soil microbial biomass. So sequestering N requires, sequestering carbon requires nitrogen because the CN ratio of soil organic matter is around 10. Can be 12, can be higher if you have high residue loads. So in the conference of parties, they suggest that we could sequester 0.6 on average, global average, 0.6 tons of carbon per year. And that's a very high number. It would be more like 0.2 to 0.3. But if we can move what we've learned from our long-term academic exercises to farmers, it may be possible. But remember, if you sequester carbon, you have to sequester nitrogen. And so Van Groningen et al. Suggests that you would need about a third more nitrogen produced chemically to make that up. And that amounts to about 50 kilograms of N per hectare on top of what you're putting on your crop. But there are inefficiencies in the system, and so maybe we can use those to look at that. So crop yield increases with soil carbon. But that's not necessary. So, but you don't need a lot of carbon to produce that effect. But if we're going to also use soils to mitigate climate change, that's sort of a competition between increasing carbon and increasing yield. And so students should be looking at the fact that when we first started intensive agriculture, we were living off the soil, we were living off the mineralized end to produce those yields. And now we're changing direction, where we're sequestering carbon and sequestering N, and so that's in competition. And so that's a new research direction that we should be thinking about. Soil carbon sequestration requires inputs. The stratification of carbon in no-till systems provides an ecosystem service, but it takes decades before global warming potential is actually a positive or negative. And soil carbon sequestration requires N. So the bottom line is, from a soil health perspective, any amount of carbon is a good thing for crop productivity. But if we're also going to use our soils to address climate change, we have to then increase the amount of carbon in our soils and then reconcile how that affects crop productivity in the end. Okay. Thank you.
So maybe we can take a couple of questions. We have like 30 seconds. So maybe one question.
Yeah, our So our biogeochemical models are set up to are based on texture, and I don't think that's totally correct, because even in California, where it's hot and everyone always said you can't sequester carbon, if you implement these practices such as cover crops or compost addition or manure addition, you get the same sequestration rates as you do in a colder climate or a wetter climate. And so no, I think management can somewhat be more important than climate, but climate then regulates the ultimate outcome. So,
thank you.
Okay. Right.